August is typically slow news, right? What they call it, slow news month.
Mm-hmm.
This year, holy Shiite Muslims. We're 3 days in. Riots all over the UK. Obviously, we still have the fallout that failed Trump assassination. It's Operation Kamala. She's apparently going to win in a landslide. Listen to the media. We've got the assassination of Hamas chief has brought Iran back into the picture versus Israel, tensions there in the Middle East, and the Venezuela election riots. I don't know how far along that is. That just dropped off my feed after being, you know, wall-to-wall coverage. Venezuela, yeah, all day long. Millions of tweets. Maduro's gone. He's already left the building. But
it's the summer heat. It's making everybody crazy.
Yeah.
Mad dogs and Englishmen. But it's also Nigeria. Mad dogs and Nigerians. Bangladesh. And Nigeria experiencing protests. So, you know, it's all more or less Northern Hemisphere stuff during the summer, you know. It's a heat. Frying their brains.
Otherwise, everything's fine.
Yeah, it's strange, though. But it does seem to, you know, it's not always the case, but it does seem to happen that summertime tends to kind of make people go off a little bit. Maybe that's a bunch of different factors, you know. People with free time in their hands, maybe on holidays. Weather's better, so people, you know, weather tends to keep people in, you know what I mean? There's not so many protests in the dead of winter in the Northern Hemisphere, you know what I mean?
The farmers' protest.
Well, yeah. Okay, but that's farmers, that's farming stock, you know. But in terms of, like, popular protests, you know.
But then they don't protest in the summer when they probably should. They'd have more effect because they're too honest. They have too much integrity. They're out there working to get the food.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But that's why they protest in the
winter. They have downtime.
Because there's a bit of downtime, yeah. So yeah, there's multiple factors, obviously, but yeah.
But it's
Bangladesh,
like,
Nigeria. Yeah. 50 people killed in Bangladesh by the government.
What... you mentioned it, so we'll just cover it quickly because I know there have been protests both sides where you've got pockets of Bangladeshi immigrants in the West have had running battles in the streets. Just in addition to the other rioting going on about, you know, the natives who want all of them out. Was that sparked by a murder by a cop in Bangladesh?
No. No. It started as a student protest, basically, against... they were demanding that the government abolish quotas for the civil service, basically for jobs, you know. You know, but just anti-government, not happy with the government. You know, something sets people off, some particular issue that people feel affects them directly, and then they get in the streets, and then it tends to spiral. So that's been going on for...
That's into a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it was last month. Okay. So, I mean, well, it's only August, but it was early to mid July. So it's been on a couple of weeks. Nigeria just 3 days, basically. People just protesting about cost of living crisis in Nigeria.
That's what happened in
7 people have died.
Kenya a couple of weeks back.
Mm.
It didn't go anywhere in the end, but they stormed the parliament in Nairobi. That was cost of living crisis.
And notably, the demonstrations were organised via social media, as in Kenya, using the hashtag #EndBadGovernance.
That's a good hashtag. Direct and to the point.
And they were inspired by the recent success of the protests in Kenya.
Right.
Where the government was forced to scrap plans to increase taxes. So it's all about, depending on the country, but in less well-off countries or less affluent countries, you're going to have cost of living, you know, price increases, tax increases, job access, you know, basically some poverty in some form or another, or people having been forced to tighten their belts that is causing those kind of protests. But then in the UK, it's all about them immigrants.
Well, no, it is. No, you're right, it is. But it's also on the back of cost of living protests as well. That's obviously part of it. In a sense, it's economic at root.
It is.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Are they saying that?
No, I'm saying that.
I know. Come on. Nah.
Well, it's not middle class people out in the streets angry because three white girls were killed. It's working class people.
Yeah. So from there. Yeah. But it's not explicitly about them saying that there's not a, you know, that there aren't enough jobs or we're being pushed. They're not explicitly saying this in an economic protest about the economic policies or, you know, we're not getting paid enough or prices are too high. Or that's not part of it at all.
No, yes, it's not in the hashtags, but surely behind all that is
talked on the streets.
The lack of access to NHS, for example, where you've got millions of people newly arrived. This competition.
Well, that's broader issues about anti-immigration, like what the impacts of immigration are, right? Yeah, but people might be grumbling about that in the background type thing, but in terms of what actually sparks it to get people on the streets and start, you know, burning and looting and stuff, seems to have been the attack during the week.
Yeah, for sure. So a recent sequence, mid-July, migrant population areas, definitely not white areas in Leeds riot over a gypsy family's kids being taken by social workers.
Mm-hmm.
That's around July 18th. Later in July, maybe the next week, police attempt to arrest two Muslims in Manchester Airport. Footage shows them kicking their heads in, and there's not really a riot that comes out of that, but it's the next in the sequence.
Mm-hmm.
Then the thing that sparked it was second-generation immigrant, 17-year-old black kid, kills three white girls while stabbing 11 kids in total. That was July 29th, and that is what just sparked this, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is weird, because there's no motive. It's one of these kind of, I'm just dead inside, or I'm doing it for lols, mm-hmm. you know, where you have to fill in the blanks.
Mm-hmm.
Atrocities, like similar to the one that sparked a riot in Sydney, I think it was in June. Young lad, maybe he's of Syrian origin, stabs a priest, also of Syrian origin, actually. Slits his throat from the cameras. Barbaric. He's actually filmed while he's being pinned down by people in the church. And he's just grinning from ear to ear.
Mm-hmm.
That's the last I've heard of that. Like, what happened there? What, you know, there's no, here, when you look at it in microcosm, well, there's no socioeconomic reason for that, mm-hmm. obviously. It's just either you put it down to rando, or the explanation we've had on offer for the last 3 decades is, well, jihadi inspired, so it's in some way religious, you know. But that kid, that wasn't for religious reasons. So same here, you've got a kid of Rwandan origin, born in Wales, just goes into, I don't know what the building was, but it was a Taylor Swift dancing class for young girls.
Themed.
And he starts stabbing in a frenzy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what the fuck? That is the incident that sparked this. But like around this, there have been other things, not just in the UK, but in Spain, in the space of 2 days, this week, two beheadings.
Yeah.
Again, well, rando. Just like...
Yeah.
But here you can probably
throat cut
a heading. It's probably there is a jihadi element.
It was throat. One of them was, and both of them were technically had their throats cut type thing. But one of them was almost decapitated.
Okay.
So, and that was in Valencia, near Valencia, south mid-east Spain on the coast there. And there wasn't much about it in the Western press really. But we just noticed these things and people go off basically, like as if they're primed like hot poppers to go off, and then when there's a spate of them over a period of a week or so, it's just like, well, that's kind of interesting. And then we see the results, you know, because anything like that, any violence, whatever the cause of the, or the rationale for the violence, let's say, or the killing, whatever it is, on the individual perpetrators, certainly in Europe, it's going, if the perpetrator is not a local, i.e. white Western European, or even just white European, then if it's anybody of a darker skin colour, then it's going to open up the whole immigration issue immediately. It's going to be tied to that, you know, regardless of the motive, you know.
Yeah, yeah. People were, that was fast how that became vectored into anti-Muslim riots. Mm. When, no, there's no Muslim involved in the thing that sparked it. Which there may be a hand behind that, manipulating that, but we can get to that in a second. Can you put that link up? It's got a map in it. Maybe it's useful. UK riots mapped. This doesn't have all the areas. I've seen an update. 1st of August. Oh, it's just shite. Of course, this is 2 days. No, is it 1st? 3rd of August. This is yesterday. Okay, where's, I think it's been updated. Scroll down a bit. Okay, let me count those. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 15. I've seen one with 17 cities. It could be more, actually. I think these are like the worst, where there is a big police response to deal with large crowds running riot, as I say. Just coming before I came here, another one, and I think it was Rotherham, the famous Rotherham. So that's also in the northeast of England, somewhere in there. They've just stormed a hotel that's housing the migrants that come off the boats. I think it's just happened this afternoon. No doubt the police will come and crack down on that too. But there's a lot of other smaller incidents. I suppose what I'm getting at here, I'm trying to gauge how is this just a flash in the pan again, or is this really big? I remember at the time you wrote about the 2011 riots in the UK. They're big enough to have a detailed Wikipedia entry on it. That would have been bigger. You would have a lot more spots in the map, for sure. It was a different thing, though. There you had a black migrant, or the child of immigrants, who was killed by police, sparking riots from their side, so to speak.
Yeah.
It also lasted longer, but then this isn't over yet, so...
The question is it really popular unrest over immigration, or do English people, most English people actually like immigrants? You know, they're happy about the immigration. I think you've got a bell curve here type thing where, you know, maybe a lot of people might actually be anti-immigration, but then you've got the, on one extreme, you know, people who will actually get out in the streets and protest about it because they're, you know, they're more worked up about it. But it brings up this question of who's really behind these protests and what it's really all about. Is it really all about immigration, Neil? Or is it about this?
Oh, for God's sake.
Now, come on, you can't discount those Russians. An obscure Russian-linked news outlet that is fueling violence on Britain's streets.
Yeah, because everyone in all those flats watches obscure Russian news websites.
Yes.
All day long.
Exactly.
What's the website in question?
Channel 3 Now.
What is that?
Channel 3 Now. You're on it all the time.
Never heard. Channel 3 Now.
That's where you got your information about the murderer. And it sent people like you, conspiracy theorists, and the far right, again like you, into a tailspin.
Never heard of it.
How did this happen?
I was reading CNN and The Guardian.
Well, if you had been reading Channel 3
News... Because I'm intelligent and educated.
If you had been reading Channel 3 Now, you would have been...
Who calls their website Channel 3 Now?
Russians.
Russians trying to imitate what a Western news outlet should sound like.
Yeah. And you notice that it sent conspiracy theorists and the far right into a tailspin.
Ah, that's bullshit.
And that's who's on the streets, conspiracy theorists on the far right.
No, this is bigger than that. This is bigger than...
At least that's what the Western media wants.
Yeah, no. They're running this now to... This is to pacify their middle class, who are, you know, boomer types who will just believe the next thing. And this fits the sequence of things they've heard since 2016. This is just to calm them down that it's okay. It is indeed an external issue, but it's not what.
But it's not only
it's
that.
It's not what your fellow Brits on the streets are saying it is. It's
what
something.
It's Russia.
It's Russia.
But well, we won't talk. We obviously talked about this, and we're not going to talk about this topic. But again, just in case you missed it, this again ties into the same story, which is that Russia is behind the gender scandal at the Paris Olympics.
Ah, for God's sake!
This is the Voice of America. This is the Voice of America telling you that Russia is behind the gender scandal at the Paris Olympics, and that's just today, actually.
But what scandal?
It's from Associated Press.
The French media told Frenchies in, and still are, a week after the opening ceremony, that it was, quote, a spectacularly successful event. And when polled, their fellow Frenchmen, only 5% thought it was inappropriate or, you know, had negative views of it.
Mm.
I mean, so you can't square that with that. Also, there was an issue, because you just said there wasn't.
Well, an issue for a fringe group of conspiracy theorists and far right.
Yeah.
So the fact that that even exists is Russia's fault. Basically, the message is that if Russia wasn't meddling in our news stories,
the West would be just harmonious.
That would be just peace.
Utopia.
Utopia. Everybody would be calm, relaxed.
And we'd all be twerking.
And we'd all be twerking at gay pride parades with drag queens.
With our kids.
We'd have surrogate parents as drag queens. Or drag queens as surrogate parents. We'd ditch our family and adopt drag queens as parents. And we'd love it.
And we'd all be happy. Mocking Jesus happily.
Yeah.
And
we'll be going to the Olympics and be watching men beat up women in boxing matches. And applauding.
Do you have an opinion about that? You must do. You brought it up.
I don't know. It's the weird
one. I swore I wouldn't talk about anything from the Olympics after seeing that opening ceremony.
What do you mean? Do I have an opinion on it?
Yeah.
Like as in, on what in particular?
The Algerian...
This fella.
I
now watch what you say there, Neil, because his name's
Lass.
Lass. There's a message here for you.
Gender row boxer Imani Khalif cries, "I am a woman," after guaranteeing Olympic medal. Can you hear that? I'd love to hear that audio. It probably sounds like, I am a woman.
I'm a woman.
This is a peculiar case, though, because this isn't like a transitioned person. She was born that way, right?
Born what way? As a dude? Yeah.
Funny, you know. Well, you've got female parts.
No.
Not surgically done. No? Also, sorry, I've heard that. It's just a peculiar case of XY chromosomes, but with female parts. Kind of like a hermaphrodite, but without the swinging part. So, very muscular indeed, yada yada. Very male in appearance. Big shoulders and everything. But actually, a woman down there. And natural tits. Not,
you know,
not surgically... stuck on.
There's no boobs there.
I can't see them there, but no, I have seen them on other. No?
Can't see them in the boxing match. There's a dude in the boxing match.
Scotty, do you have an opinion?
Scotty's got pictures. Scotty's
laughing over here. I'm trying to just say this with a. I'm trying not to be Russian influencer. I'm trying to say what they're saying and to make it all, you know, harmonious. Really, I'm giving y'all the benefit of the doubt. What the fuck was that?
I think you're just scared of that dude. Because he looks scary.
Do you see the photo of Macron?
Come and get you.
With Khalif.
Yeah.
I think it's not from this event. It's from before. He is loving it.
Yeah.
He knows. His gaydar was like, bing.
Well, he has a penchant for for those kinds of things.
No.
A bit of a, I mean, here he is. I think it's from, 2022. Got the earrings, stud earrings, mind you, but Macron's very taken with him. Lovely, lovely. Are you married? Do you want to be?
You know what makes it all the more weirder? It's from a Muslim majority country.
Mm.
That's just like extra weird factor there. So what is, what's your understanding of, you haven't corrected me yet. It's not a transition person. That's just how they are.
It's right? A dude, yeah. That's my opinion. That's a dude right there.
And he's boxing the head off female.
Yeah.
Boxers.
Some things you don't really need to think too hard about them, you know.
Okay.
I mean, you should, you know, just go with your first blink, like, that's a dude. You know, I mean, I don't care if like they start coming up with like, and maybe they already have come up with like these kind of somewhere in between hermaphrodites, whatever. However the person kind of presents, you know, on my first blink, like I'm just going to say, you know, you're a dude, like, you know, we're going to put you in that box, you know. If it's like if there's men and women, and then there's a small group of people who are like some kind of a weird, very very small group, but weird, you know, kind of in between. Then it's on a case by case basis, you know. Just see them and go, okay, you go in the dude box, you can go in the girl box, you can go in the dude box, you can go in the girl box, because that's how you present, you know. Just look at your musculature, look at your face, look how you talk, look how you act, you know. And that's for normal people. Obviously with drag queens, I'd put them in a different box, but anyway.
There are a lot of athletes though who end up competing in women category, female category, who have very high testosterone levels naturally, so they haven't been doping. Like there was a South African sprinter maybe two Olympics ago, and it was like, is that allowed? And then the IOC came out and said, yeah, because we've decided that at this level of whatever the hormone balance is, that counts as valid for competing in women's sports. But anything above that, no. I haven't heard any discussion of that standard this time with this person.
Yeah, it's just like it's obviously something that, you know, it's obviously something that's easily sorted out. Because you're talking about a very, very small percentage of the population, like this guy, that guy, and the other guy who's competing in the boxing competition as well, Taiwanese? Anyway, there's another dude, basically, who's you know, winning in the boxing against women. And it's easily sorted out. You know, those two were not allowed to compete, officially were not allowed to compete by the World Athletics Organization, whatever, in the World Championships of Athletics, you know. I don't think elsewhere they're allowed to compete in boxing against in women's boxing. They just shouldn't have been allowed to compete in the Olympics. The fact that they were just makes an issue out of something, and you know, makes it seem ridiculous and causes.
She's previously had a ruling against her to compete.
Yeah. That dude wasn't allowed to compete in women's boxing. Yeah,
interesting, but. An exception was made for the Olympics which only compounds opening ceremony and deliberate messaging that they're trying to use.
The Olympics, you know, governing committee or whoever makes these decisions are obviously super woke, you know, and they're all about the fields, right? So they don't want to stop this dude from competing in women's boxing because it would hurt his feelings. But they don't care about the feelings of the women who are getting beaten by him, soundly beaten by him. And in fact, the one that he beat the other day, an Italian girl, I think, she basically was like crying at the end of it, you know, and she had to give up. She only lasted 46 seconds, and they don't care about her feelings. So it's not really about feelings, and you can discount the idea that it's about the fields, right? It's about some agenda to try and normalize the idea that men can be women and women can be men. It's just crass and stupid, you know, and it's just like they keep doing it and people go, that's stupid, and they just go, we don't care, we're going to keep doing it. So, well, fine, keep doing it. But every time they do it, people are just going to increasingly go, you're stupid, that's wrong. We're not believing what you're saying. So, you know, take a hike. Anyway, yeah. Is that all you want to say about the riots then?
No, but no. I don't really know what else to say. It's is it contrived? It's probably too soon to say, but there really is a powder keg out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, this is spontaneous, but I can't get away from the fact that the heat and explosion of it syncs pretty well with Israeli needs right now.
Hmm.
I mean, Israeli needs are always paramount, but at the moment they are just flagrantly itching for a regional war that brings the United States into it to get their goals, achieve their goals. More land, less Muslims in it, probably a combination of the two. And you've got at least at some of these protests, and it's been a consistent theme throughout not in these riots, but in similar protests, either about mass migration or even cost of living or counter-protest against the pro-Palestinian protest. The Israeli flag keeps popping up. It's there front and center with the nationalist flag, wherever they are. We saw it in Northern Ireland as well, but maybe that's more, that there's a stronger history of it popping up there. But
it's the Zionist imperative is that the West must support us because we're just a shitty little country in the Middle East that can't really, you know, survive on its own without the backing of the, you know, American, European countries. So we need, their imperative is that we need that support from them. And Israel itself obviously is founded and based on the idea of perpetual antagonism against its Muslim neighbours. It would never, it doesn't want to, you know, it's, you know, the only, quote unquote, the only democracy in the Middle East, and it's the most powerful country in the Middle East, let's say. It calls the shots, it can act with impunity, it wants to continue to be able to do that. It wouldn't be able to do that if it was not supported by Western countries. So it pitches itself as this haven of freedom and democracy and Western liberal democracy, whatever, in the Middle East, the only democracy in the Middle East. And the, you know, Western democracies therefore should support it, and as many people have described Israel as America's land-based aircraft carrier in the Middle East, so it's geopolitically and strategically, militarily, it's very important and always has been for America to maintain control in that oil-rich region. So Israel exists on the basis that Muslims are a threat to it. It gets all of the largesse and the money and the weapons and all that kind of stuff based on the idea that it's under threat. So it has to always be under threat. So there's a lot of self-fulfilling prophecy going on. It always has been a self-fulfilling prophecy as far as Israel goes, you know. I can imagine that, you know, there has been over a long period of time Israeli influence in Western countries to turn the population of Western countries to one extent or another, or to the greatest extent possible, against Muslims in general. Well, that's why, you know, 9/11 was a big one where suddenly everybody was anti-Muslim, right? There were these evil Muslims. I mean, the war on, what was it? The war on terror was actually called the war on Islam. Was it Muslim terrorism originally, or Islamic terrorism? Muslim terrorism, I think. Anyway, it was commonly known as the war on Muslim terrorism, right? It was terrorism was Muslims, right? So that meme of Muslims being head choppy and bomby, that kind of thing.
And stabby
is something that, you know, has been a long time in the making. And especially then when you flood Western countries with immigrants, a lot of whom are Muslims. Well, you know, so a long period of programming to see Muslims in a very bad light and then bring them all into your country. And then everybody says, you know, let's have some riots to get these Muslims out of here. And everybody sympathizes with Israel because Israel has the same problem, right? They have a Muslim problem as well, you know. Israel has had a long-term Muslim problem where they've been under threat and attack from Muslims. So we're all, us and Israel, we're all on the same page in that respect, you know.
You remember, probably over 10 years ago, we were doing discussions about this.
Mm.
Probably pre-video, pre-newsreel. It was Blog Talk Radio then.
Mm.
And we were talking about whatever spate of terror attacks, maybe it was later than that, maybe it was more like the series that happened in France, 2015, 2016, mm. and elsewhere, UK, Germany. And we're like, because back then there were still lots of signatures that they were contrived.
Mm-hmm.
There was a second gunman. Police opened the door for the guy over here. There was an escape route. Yeah, they weren't caught and blah, blah, blah. There was a quality to the way it was mediatized with stories being pushed out and then retracted that suggested it was a setup. Well, we were wondering how long before all of this shite from the spooky types, the intelligence community, would actually bite
and become real
and take effect in the social milieu organically.
It was pretty hard to do, like.
I think we're here now.
Yeah, well, it's getting there for sure. I mean, it's a long period of
time. There are videos of people that are going to lynch the nearest Paki in England right now.
Yeah, although that's very difficult to do because, like, Pakistanis and Indians and mainly Pakistanis and Indians in the UK, for example, or Maghrebians, like North African, Algerians, mm. Moroccans in France, in Germany as well. You know, the other in these European countries, a lot of them have been there a long time, you know. In the UK, you're talking about people who have been there for two generations. You know, been there since the 1950s.
1960s.
You know, so a lot of them are born there and are as English as the English in a certain sense, you know what I mean? Well, you know, a lot of them are actually as English as the English in terms of their culture and all that kind of stuff. They're not really, they don't bring this, you know, Indian or Pakistani culture with them, you know. So it'd be hard, I think, to get many people in the UK behind that, you know what I mean? Because they realise that, you know, you're talking about major civil strife in our own communities. It's happening on that map. It's happening in very specific places probably have very specific conditions.
Yeah, where there's a large white pocket here next to a large...
Yeah, segregation going on, you know. But that's bad enough, you know. But I don't think it's going to get to the point where they can have a mass uprising amongst the majority of the English population type thing to route the foreigner.
I know. The race war. Jesus Christ, the CIA has been on about the race war since they contrived, we now know, thanks to Tom O'Neill, the Manson murders in 1969. That's the first time that popped up. Yeah, so they didn't run with it fully, but in the background, what they told the media to tell the population was... Charlie Manson and his group of hippies, what they were sort of trying to do was to set off a race war. And on the face of it, people were like, what the fuck are you talking about?
He killed
that actress in Hollywood and her friends and stuff. No blacks involved. But that was the beginning of something. You can see the idea seeding, I think, in their minds. There'll come a time where it'll be useful for us, important, in fact, fucking existential for us, that before they get together and focus upwards and come and take our heads off, we need to get them to fight among themselves.
Hmm.
And it seems like an impossible task for the reasons you just said. Like, but they're trying anyway, it seems, long term. Who they is, a lot of this is hard to tease out because it's so long term.
Hmm.
Is it a coherent conspiracy by multi-generational, you know, actors or carrying on the plan? You know, you get lost in the... But just looking at the broad strokes of it, that's kind of where...
I think...
Power and influence is trying to...
Yeah, I think if you can, you know, make life... I think it's multifactorial in terms of the discontent among any population, you know. It's multifactorial, you know. It's not just, it can be, you know, immigration, that's at the front end, if you know, like seeing people coming into your country, and it, like in Ireland, for example, diluting the local population down with strange people that have never lived there before and that kind of stuff. That's,
and competing for resources.
And competing for resources, all that kind of stuff.
There is a housing problem, and right, people do problem. Connect well, with the newly arrived.
Is if generally speaking, you know, economic conditions in any given country aren't that good, if you know what I mean. They're trending downhill, and more people are finding it harder and harder to put food on their families, as George W. Bush said, and having to work multiple jobs and all that kind of stuff. That's just a stressor to the system, right? And then popular culture, and if there's, you know, the aspects of the popular culture that are just, you know, increasingly atheistic, let's say, there's no spirituality, there's no sense of, there's no relief people can find in say, religion or some form of spirituality. It's all very materialistic, consumer culture. Of materialistic goods and pastimes and diversions and stuff. That's not good for the soul in a certain sense, you know. So there's many different factors that contribute to a malaise amongst the population that then will take its will find an out in the path of least resistance, let's say, or the most obvious way that it can be, that anger can be expressed, you know, or that discontent can be expressed. And obviously then immigration is front and centre, you know, in particular areas, in particular countries. It's the one that would be the match or whatever, the ignition of that anger, the focus of a certain anger that isn't necessarily about, is about those people, not only about immigrants, is about immigrants, but not only about immigrants. That people, if times were better in various other factors of various other aspects of their lives, if things were better, they would be more tolerant. But they're made less tolerant by other stressors.
Hmm.
And are any of those manufactured? Maybe. There's an element of it being manufactured in particular instances where things are injected into specific situations. But I think, generally speaking, we just have a trend of a kind of pathocratic trend of you know, corruption amongst government and a complete lack of representation, really lack of representation amongst the political class, you know, for the representative for the people, and pathocracy, corrupt government, things getting worse and worse, and things just being, if you're talking about just extremely corrupt government officials and a whole government bureaucracy that's very just self-serving, corrupt, and doesn't really care about the people, and then that's going to have many knock-on effects down in society that are going to create a society that isn't very enjoyable for people to live in, isn't going to give them what they need to be happy.
Yeah,
is that manufactured? No, that's just human nature, or some kind of human nature that is rising to the top, like the scum is rising to the top, basically. And it happens in periods of human history, you know what I mean, where things just get really bad.
Another layer of it in the UK is the ideological capture we now know was going on when the scandals like the Rotherham scandal, and there's a half a dozen or more specific towns and big cities where there's grooming gangs. Mm. I mean, and they were specifically targeting young white working class girls. That was the pattern. And the police and local and then government level politicians, they got attacked for being in on it, but there's documentaries made, even by BBC, where they definitely took the side of the victims,
yeah,
at least, and some of them, in some of the reports. But they were like, the thing that kept turning up was that authorities were reluctant to deal with it because immediately it brought up a race issue.
Mm-hmm.
Shit. Don't just keep it.
That's the most obvious explanation, that you got to keep society, you know, together, let's say.
They buried it, and now look,
it'll eventually comes out, yeah. But that's, again, it gets back to the things I was saying about conditions and the living conditions, the quality of life that certain people have in certain parts of a given country, and how they're, you know, makes them predisposed to getting angry and violent, and they look at those others that are coming and taking our jobs, or, you know, they look for an excuse or an explanation for why I'm suffering in this way, why I'm not happy. And the most obvious one is those blow-ins, those new ones that came into our town. Even if they live in the country for a long time, they've come in here. But a lot of them haven't, because there has been a lot of immigration into the UK in the past few years, hundreds of thousands over the past few years of new immigrants have come into the UK. I mean, that's an example of corruption in government, essentially, because that's just an economic factor that we know that governments have been bringing immigrants into countries around the Western world for economic factors. They want, you know, to stimulate the economy with, you know, the economy is growing in a certain sense. There's more jobs, there's more people. The more people you have, the more services are needed, the more people you need to offer those services. So you bring in a lot of immigrants to fill menial task jobs and all that kind of stuff, you know, because that boosts the economy, let's say. So again, it's, but somebody's getting rich out of it, you know. It's really mismanagement. It's irresponsible mismanagement of these countries, you know, by a corrupt political class.
Yeah, yeah. And at the core, the fact that they see it in that purely
materialist,
monetary, mercantilist way, mm-hmm. without taking into account the way, when he says it, he's not just dog whistling, as mm-hmm. the press castigates yep. Putin for saying. He's talking about values yeah. and what unites us.
Right. But that's because those people, the scum that has risen to the top in a pathocratic society like that we have in most Western Europe, Western countries, they don't have those values. That scum, pathological scum that are the top of the political class that call the shots, they don't actually care about anything spiritual. They don't have a spiritual bone in their bodies. So the idea that they would it's obvious that they won't understand those kind of spiritual needs amongst the population when they don't actually share those spiritual needs themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, they might give lip service to them, but they don't know what they're talking about. They know the words, but they don't know the music. They talk about it, but they don't feel it themselves. So they're basically creating a society based on their own internal makeup, you know, their own internal psychological makeup, which is pretty pathological. And while trying to bamboozle people by pandering to what apparently you should say, yes, this is good, we need this, these values, whatever, they don't implement them because there isn't the motivation within them to implement them because they see no value in those values.
Yeah.
Because they don't value them themselves, obviously, because they're deviant human beings. And then eventually ordinary human beings in society will eventually be forced to react against that, the effects of that as it trickles down into policy and government policy, and, you know, economic policy, housing policy, immigration policy, et cetera,
But on the streets and online, good luck trying to convince them that there is not intent behind that. What you just said explains that the leadership is not intentionally out to wreck its own
farm.
Why would they do that?
It's
their own backyard. They're not trying to destroy their own country. But the belief is that the popular belief is that there must be intent. They keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to wreck the country. They're trying to bring them in. They're trying mm-hmm. to make chaos for us. You know,
mm-hmm.
They're looking for intent. And then the best that the state propaganda organs will come up with was, it's intent you want. Here. Our research shows Russia is intending all this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they look for intent. I mean, they mix shit up. I mean, these people have no, really, these political members of the political class have very little ability for any kind of interest, self-reflection, introspection. There's not really much going on inside them, you know. And it's hard to tease out a difference or know if there's a difference between malintent and indifference. Like, indifference can cause very negative outcomes. You know, if someone is under someone else's care, but the person caring for them is indifferent to them, then they'll do things or won't do things that could end up in that person suffering, you know, or dying. And, okay, for intent, you'd have to find you know, evidence that person actually deliberately tried to kill that person, but you can kill someone through neglect.
Mm.
You know, so I think it's closer to the idea of neglect and the reason the political class is neglectful of the needs of the population is because they don't share those needs.
Yeah, they don't care.
They don't share the needs, therefore they don't care. You know, so there's not even any malintent in that respect. You know, it's like, I just don't know what you're talking about. You know, it's like, you know, though the puppy's, you know, falling into the water, you know, save it. Why? You know what I mean?
Mm.
It's like, it's the difference between two different responses, you know what I mean? And it fundamentally posits the idea of two fundamentally different human beings, you know what I mean? Or a class of different human beings from the majority of the population who actually are, you know, to some extent, at least to some extent, empathetic and considered and cooperative individuals, whereas who want to, you know, live peaceably and, you know, in a positive society, and they more or less know what they need, you know. But they're under all sorts of, again, it comes back to that idea of just a corrupt political elite, a deviant, corrupt, deviant political elite who don't share the same, not only they don't share the same values as the members of the population, because they don't have the same internal makeup as the members of the rest of the population. So, but that doesn't mean that there aren't certain elements or certain individuals, groups within government who have specific malintent, who want to, you know, but even then they would probably see it as a means to an end in a certain sense, where it's like, look, we have to kind of like stoke these fires here or provoke this because it's for the good of the country, for example. You know, like the way the media presents, you know, we were pausing there, you were wondering if there's any instigation in these riots or if anybody was put up to it or, you know. But you can have Asian provocateurs in those riots. That's a very, very common thing. In any kind of protests, the government have thrown a bunch of Asian provocateurs to go and smash some windows and loot some shops and hopefully pull in other members, at least some other members of the peace, otherwise peaceful protest, and then the media can present that as a bunch of violent thugs who everybody should just dismiss and ignore, you know? So that way they subvert. If that actually was genuinely a grassroots protest or expression of anger for justified reasons, the government goes, we don't want that at all. Not, first of all, we don't understand what these people are complaining about. Secondly, we don't want them pointing the finger at us. So let's make them look bad. Let's make them look like a bunch of right-wing conspiracy thugs and have the media say that. And the way we do that is go and put in some...
In that framing of it, do you think the systematic burning down of potential sites that would house the newly arrived in Ireland is being done by the state?
No.
That's grassroots.
Yeah, no, I was referring more to the stuff in England, you know.
Yeah.
There's looting of shops.
Yeah, I've jumped across.
But even then, I don't know who's involved in those protests and whether, you know, it's hard to know. But you always have to keep the idea of Asian provocateurs in those protests because they've been documented.
Sure. Tommy Robinson, a man of the people or instigator? We should clarify that the British press is whispering things about Russia, but their main cudgel, their main person they're beating in the media is Tommy Robinson at EDL, which he points out doesn't exist anymore as an organization, the English Defence League. I've seen a couple of his video statements these last few days, and he's asking people to calm down.
Mm-hmm.
He says, no, I want peaceful revolution. And when you go, he's saying all the right things. When you go violent, they'll come down on you like a ton of bricks. They'll blast it all over the press and it makes us all look bad.
Yep.
I don't know why would they, you'd think they would actually use Farage, but they don't. They're hitting Tommy Robinson, who's like, he's not even that influential, I think.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm wrong, right?
But he probably has an appeal to certain, you know, kind of working class, white English nationalists, basically, you know what I mean? So he's a dangerous person. You got to keep tabs on him. You know, he's dangerous in that respect, where he could be.
It's so weird listening to him, because you can be like, yeah, 100%. And then he goes Hamas, and I'm like,
no, that's always
fucking the case. Hamas? Well, the fuck does that? There's no Palestinians involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, dodgy. And then people bring up, well, in the past, he's had trips to Israel, he's waved the Israeli flag. And that's where, you know, you start to wonder. But
him and Jordan Peterson.
Yeah, but so many of them do. Farage, you know, bashes.
All of them do. Because they bought the bullshit about...
That scene, I really...
About Israel.
Just, there's a bit of excitement about the, specifically the protests in Belfast. That resulted in, it looked like a group that is involved in the protests in Dublin, protest/riot, they burned down another potential site for the newly arrived in Coolock in Dublin. They went up to Belfast to join an anti-immigrant protest this weekend. And the scene was on one side of, there was a counter-protest, on one side you've got your trade union types, lefties, waving red flags, and the Palestinian flag, and the LGBTQ plus CIA flag. And on the other side, you've got the Union Jack, the Irish Tricolour, and even the Ulster banner. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? People are noting, wow, that's amazing. The Irish nationalists and the British nationalists are together. Yay, there's hope. Mm. But I'm like, that's interesting. Okay, maybe. But what is the Palestinian flag doing on the other side? Because that's a nationalist resistance movement against armed oppression. Why is it with the LGBTQ flag? It should be on the other side, because they also have a land and people issue against a foreign threat. But it's the success of Israeli neocon Zionist propaganda over a couple of generations that has led to a situation where they've got people putting the Israeli flag with today's nationalists against foreign globalist interests. That switcheroo, we can't dismiss what you just said. It's a multifactorial, complex, structural issue, but in the middle of it.
But they don't see Israel as foreign, a foreign, you know, entity, let's say, even though it literally is. But that's why, you know, I mean, you've got West, you've got the Golden Billion, you've got the West, right, and the Five Eyes, you've got Australia, New Zealand, Europe, the EU, America, and Israel. They're the civilized world, right? So, you know, any country can be a part of that if they get on board, right? Because you've got New Zealand way down the other end of the world, but that's all English people, basically, and English and Irish and Scottish people. Australia is the same. They're just colonies of little England. And America is a colony of England as well, you know, and Europe is close to England, it's white Europeans, you know. So it is like, there's a commonality there in a certain sense. You could exclude Israel because, like, Israelis aren't they are European as well, you see, but they are an anomaly in that respect. There's no other part of this, of the Golden Billion, of the international community that
is conducting genocide in the interest of getting more land.
Yeah, yeah.
And whose enemy they've convinced the nationalists, to some extent, against the globalists, is also their enemy.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
The ones being they're genociding.
Yeah.
That mind job is like, it keeps popping up in all this.
Yeah. And it's. But Israel is a project, obviously. Israel is a project of the West. You know, its location in the Middle East. It was established there for specific reasons, i.e. controlling oil resources and natural resources in the Middle East. So in that sense, it is, yeah, definitely a part of the Western world. And they're Europeans, you know, the ones that run Israel are Eastern Europeans, you know, they're Ashkenazi Jews, you know. But there's no other country amongst that Golden Billion that actually is claiming, you know, rights to, you know, other people's land, has done for, you know, 2,000 years, not 2,000 years, has done for 80 years and has established itself on other people's land, on other people's land, and it's in contravention of multiple UN resolutions, etc., etc. There's no other part of the Golden Billion that's doing that. Like, New Zealand isn't doing anything like that. You know, Australia isn't doing anything. No European country is doing that.
And who is routinely pulled up for torture.
Yeah.
The United States did after 9/11, but routinely torture, genocide now, apartheid.
Mm-hmm.
All its settlements, again, recently, UN, ICJ restated, every single one of them have to be dismantled.
But that's why, to justify Israel's position as a member of the Western world, Israel's problem, or Israel's, you know, situation where it's at war with Muslims, because it can't not be at war with Muslims in the Middle East because it's stolen their land, and none of them like Israel for having stolen their land, which is normal, and nobody would like anybody that's stolen your land. And that's why the West has to be on board with, part of the Western narrative has to be that Muslims are bad. And that gets back to what we were talking about earlier about, you know, it may be, you know, it probably, it's probably the case that at certain points in the past, certain operations by certain governments were put into place to make that true, make Muslims a problem for European and Americans. They were a big problem immediately for Americans on 9/11, and then in subsequent terror attacks and ISIS and all that kind of stuff in Europe in particular, they were a big problem for Europe. So it's like you said earlier on about Netanyahu telling the Americans, you know,
In Congress,
your problems are our problems.
And he brought up civilization versus barbarism again. Mm. And that comes back to the mid-90s, the clash of civilizations. Mm-hmm. Forget his name, but there was another author, top-selling. I bought it because, shit, everyone else was reading it. Benjamin Barber, sort of lefty neocon, author of Jihad versus Macworld, predicting amazingly, presently, how we're going to end up in this situation of a kind of a globalized, civilized world versus this atavistic hangout, which would this is pre 9/11. This is 1996. He publishes this, Jihad versus Macworld, that the Muslim world would go the other way. There would be something that would make, and they would become, and it would become basically global terrorism.
Mm.
How the fuck does he know that?
No.
Plus civilization versus barbarism, that the setting of the very concept happened in a time in the mid-90s when who could have thought of that? There was nothing in...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There were a few hints. I mean, there had been the World Trade Center bombing in 1993. Maybe there had been the...
Bin Laden was around.
Bin Laden was around. There were a few hints. And based on that, these guys publish like amazing prophetic books that are top sellers in the New York Times bestseller list,
mm-hmm.
setting down a concept that only that everyone knows now. Everyone's familiar with now. I can see it now. Yeah, it's the civilization versus those barbaric types,
mm-hmm.
and that really took hold, because now a lot of people, don't know if it's majority, but a lot of people, when they see another large number of people protesting in London, waving the Palestinian flag
mm-hmm.
at the outset of the genocide last fall,
mm-hmm.
they have the blink, my God, look at that. The barbarians, the term they use, are in our house. Not just at the gates, they have invaded us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, to our view of the world, that's like, where the hell did that come from? Well, you have the seeds of it 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah, but they, I mean, they invaded us because of government economic policy. They didn't invade us. Government brought them in.
Yeah.
So it only, that narrative of like they're going to invade us and stuff, it falls apart whenever you realize that it's the government actually welcomed them in. You know, it's like people might have thought, well, those guys who wrote those kind of books and those treaties would have thought Western governments were going to have to stand as a bulwark against this this bunch of atavistic Muslims all trying to invade us or conquer us or take us over. But in fact, it's the opposite. They actually opened the door and said, come on in.
Actually, the guy who wrote Clash of Civilizations was on the right wing of the neocon, and that's what he argued for. Put up the walls,
yeah.
Don't.
Yeah.
That's what people forget that term. Forget his name. That was what he was calling for, that, you know. Whatever you do, don't.
Yeah. Anyway, what else has been going on?
Well, this is the natural follow-on is 4 days ago now, the assassination of Ismail Haniyeh. Arguably the leader of Hamas. But he's been in Qatar for years. He's not in Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
He's visiting Tehran. I'm not sure why, but he was not there long, and he's assassinated. And Iran said yesterday that It was a small device fired, they didn't say from what. It sounds like, at 7 kilos, they said, mm-hmm. it sounds like it was fired from a drone into his hotel room.
Yeah, and that runs counter to the official story that came out of the New York Times. I think it was saying that it was a bomb, or three bombs were placed in it.
Pre-placed bombs,
which obviously that would have been a serious security lapse, you know, when somebody can actually
get into
the house.
They were trying to make Iran look bad, I think, with that.
And they do that all the time, actually. They try and keep them worried and suspicious and paranoid about, you know, the extent of Israeli or U.S. But definitely the U.S. was the claim that they had no advance notice of this, whatever, but... Yeah, right. I'm pretty sure the U.S., now, some element of the U.S. government was directly involved in that or directly approved of it, you know.
And Westerners will eat that up as, well, you know, that's fair game, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They did October 7th, so you get the guy who masterminded the back. He wasn't Hamas military. He was a political figure. Mm-hmm. Even Israel itself acknowledges he was the lead negotiator with Israel. He's a political figure. This is the guy whose kids and grandkids were all blown up in April, or lots of them. You just killed the chief negotiator.
Right.
Which tips Israel's hand.
Because Israel doesn't want peace.
It doesn't want peace.
I don't know how stupid you have to be to not look at that situation and realize that, I mean, okay, maybe you have to have done a bit of research and know the history of the Israel and Palestine, you know, going back 20, 30, 40 or more years. I don't know a bit about that, but if you do know even a little bit about that, you realize that Israel has been gunning for, you know, a final solution to their Palestinian problem for decades, you know. So when an opportunity like October 7th comes along, they're going to go for it. Like, obviously, this was the big one, you know. This is what they had been waiting on for a very long time—a justification to enact this final solution to their Palestinian problem. And you know, that obviously brings up the question of whether or not it was contrived. You know, because if I need someone to act in a certain way in order for me to justify a certain response that will get me what I've long sought after, but they don't do that, well. Maybe I can make them do it. Maybe I can do it in their name. Anyway, October 7th provided that justification for the implementation of a very long held and desired plan or solution to Israel's Palestinian problem, which was basically to get rid of the Palestinians. So in that context or in that respect, obviously... Israel does not want peace. Peace was never negotiations for releasing hostages. Far from wanting the release of hostages, Israel wants the hostages. Needed the hostages. Needed Hamas to take the hostages and needs them to stay there so it can continue its bombing campaign to get the hostages. You know, and we'll get the hostages whenever the last Palestinian is dead. That's when we'll release them. You know, because all the Palestinians are responsible for holding the hostages. Whatever. The point is, they want to continue on this military bombing campaign of Gaza until they're satisfied, until they achieve whatever aim they have set for themselves, which, in my opinion, is the, you know, making Gaza into a non-livable place for Palestinians. There's no more Palestinians in Gaza. And then they'll probably handle the West Bank as well. They'd like to either get rid of a lot of Palestinians out of the West Bank, most of them maybe, or half of them, or whatever, a certain number. They probably have all sorts of detailed plans about the scenario they want to achieve. And they're going to continue on doing that until they achieve it, or at least that's their plan. And because, I mean, there's been protests about, in Israel, like large-scale protests against Netanyahu for not negotiating to release the hostages. A lot of people in Israel want those hostages home. The government doesn't want them home. The government wants them to stay there so they can use them as an excuse to continue to bomb Gaza. It's very simple. I don't know, like I said, I don't know how stupid you have to be to not realise that just by looking at a cursory glance at the situation. It's so obvious that that's what's happening. And now, yeah, how does the killing of Haniyeh, the Hamas leader in Iran... How does that lead to suddenly an escalation that's all-out Middle East war now? I mean, I don't think so.
Yeah, well, here we are. It's Sunday evening. On Friday, Iran raised a red flag of revenge. We've seen that before. I think that was after Soleimani was assassinated. That has signaled that they'll do something. They then explicitly said so through channels, TV, and through that Professor Morandi guy. He tweets something with missiles flying and said, just says, leave now before it's too late.
It's coming. But it's
we're all
its
waiting,
time, right?
But is,
I you mean, know why you're waiting.
Is this like another missile barrage, like the last one?
Well, you need time to you know, iron out the details, get the deets straight with Israel.
You think that's explicitly done?
You have to work it out. Like, you have to get on calls with Israel and the US. You've got the Iranians, the Israelis, and the Americans on a call saying, "Okay, how are we gonna? What way is this one gonna go?" Like the last one in April, we all agreed on a load of those Shahed drones, a handful of missile strikes at night time, plenty of warning, you know what's happening.
Middle of the runway.
You guys, we get to say, you see, you know, the great Antichrist, the great Satan, America and Israel and the evil, the illegal Zionist entity are trembling in their boots. They have seen the power of the great Iranian nation. They will not dare to ever again lift a hand against us.
And yet here we are.
So that's what we did. And then, so we'll say that. The Iranians are like, we'll say that. And then the Israelis will say, okay, and we'll shoot down all of your drones. And except one rocket, let's say, and we'll say, you see, those Iranians aren't worth shit. We have the best, most awesomest air defense system in the world. People in Israel have nothing to fear. We have taught the Iranians that they are an impotent force in the region, and they will never again try to attack us. And then the Americans say, now, children, y'all stop fighting. And so they all agreed that was how it was going to go, and that's how it went. Is that happening again this time?
Well, there are rumors of Russian military cargo planes flying more than usual in and out of Iran. A number of governments have warned their citizens to leave Lebanon, like yesterday, post-haste. There was the thing with, Hezbollah's exchanging fire with Israel every day, but the Israeli government got it. There's people worked up by one strike that hit. Technically, it's the Golan Heights, so it's not even Israeli, but we saw that last week, killing kids.
Killing Syrians, not Israelis.
Syrians.
Syrian Druze.
Something could drop now, but it may not be Armageddon. We all have Armageddon, like...
Armageddon
collapse disorder, you know, where it's been like... almost 10 months now of any day now. Okay, this time.
Sure, so, yeah. I mean, the media is nuts too. Like, you know, I mean, the media is just... There was an article... Let me see the... I think I have the headline here. There you go. This is the Telegraph. And it went up for a few hours and then it went away again. And I'm like, okay, fair enough. If you think that was a good headline to put up, then... that's your prerogative, but like, didn't actually happen. This was yesterday morning. Global stocks plunge amid fears of US collapse. Okay. And then 2 hours later, it was like, meh. Yeah, they didn't actually collapse. And global stocks were.
I presume they meant US stock market collapse.
Who knows? But when you put a headline out like that, I mean, it really is it's feeding into, like you were just saying, a kind of a sense of. Impending doom or something, you know? And of course, the media, either they're feeling it as well or they're deliberately stoking that kind of sentiment, you know? Anyway, yeah, I don't know what is going to happen in the Middle East, if anything.
Today,
there's all sorts of rumors. Wars and rumors of wars.
Today's the anniversary of this, remember? There we were. Enjoying our lockdowns or not, depending on the situation. And geopolitics seemed to like not exist anymore. ISIS told their people, all right, everyone, lockdown. There were terrorist attacks just stopped everywhere. And then August 3rd, 2020, this happened.
Kabumba. Yeah.
So, yeah, everyone knew that was Israelis. That was the first blink. And then, of course, the media said, well, you know, probably fertilizer, stuff like that. You know, shit happens. Kaboom.
Yeah, doesn't happen. If that happens, then it'll be happening a lot more.
Yeah.
And it doesn't happen really very often at all. It's certainly so strategically placed, you know. But they just did that for the lols, like, in a certain sense, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it obviously hadn't damaged the Lebanese economy. And
big time. And there were protests and stuff.
But yeah, you store a bunch of fertilizer in a hangar in the port in Beirut. And then you just, you know, get a bunch of Mossad agents in there to put a few detonators at choice locations. And easy done. Those are the agents of chaos, you know. But yeah. You said we were we probably should say a little bit about it, but I'll just say this before. You said we were enjoying our lockdown. Was that during lockdown, yeah?
Maybe the second one ended.
Right.
But still, it was 2020. It was COVID wall to wall.
Right.
Geopolitics was dead. It even had me going, maybe wars are over. They're a thing of the past. We're in the new... Not that I thought we were in utopia. I thought we were in a new dystopia where they're done. They're all in on it to some extent or another, and they're done. Geopolitics, chessboard is set. No. It then exploded back. But seriously, terrorist attacks, look at the charts. They went to zero about a year.
University of Oxford study... This is the actual headline. Long-term cognitive and psychiatric effects of COVID-19 revealed in new study. Here's a quote from it. 2 to 3 years after being infected with COVID-19, participants scored, on average, significantly lower in cognitive tests than expected. The average was equivalent to a shocking 10 IQ points deficit. So, let me get this straight. A virus that no serious person, including scientists at this point, doubts... was made in a lab and tweaked in a lab and engineered in a lab, we have to assume, you would assume, for very specific purposes, to change it in a certain way that makes it have different effects or have, you know, ends up in a study by Oxford University showing that one of the effects it has in terms, you know, over a longer term is that it makes you more stupid. And this was a virus that was engineered by the elite, the deep state, I don't know what you call them. US military scientists at the bidding of higher ups or someone. Someone wanted to, and very successfully, you know, distributed this virus for the purpose of making people more stupid. Now, why would they want to do that? This isn't an accident, like. They have to assume that this is
the intended outcome.
The explicitly intended outcome of they want to make people stupid. Why? Because they don't want them
informed,
thinking about things. They want them compliant, and because why would you want a compliant population like to that extent? You know, because you're going to do things that you don't want them pushing back against. You want them unable to push back against things that you're planning to do.
You don't want them ever voting for. Or demanding a government that more or less shares their values.
Hmm.
You want to keep it as it is.
Hmm.
Mercantilist, global, globalist, in quotes, Western dominated.
Yeah.
You don't want people demanding someone like an Orban or someone like a Putin.
Hmm. You want them just to nod their head and agree with
someone
everything.
Like Farage or someone like Trump.
So,
to, you know, ameliorate their situation.
Yeah.
To broadly bring governance in line with the wishes of the majority of people. You want to keep minority rule.
When I posted this, they said, a lot of people were saying, yeah, no, it's the vax. Vax had that effect.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, both, maybe. But certainly the virus was engineered and tweaked in a particular way, that furin cleavage site, insertion of certain elements, whatever. That was done to the virus, and we assume that this is one of, we can assume, I suppose, this was one of the intended effects, that they're able to actually engineer a virus that they know will make people stupid. This has never been said, that people get more stupid after the flu or a cold or any other virus. It's never been reported that this happens, like, because those are natural viruses. This virus was specifically engineered in order to make people more stupid.
The one thing I don't like about that is, why then draw attention to it and get people to try to avoid it if possible, if it's more or less working as intended?
Too late. You can't get people.
Imagine if it just leaked it out and no one noticed. And the COVID cases, the actual syndromes people had, just got folded into the flu.
Well, because of the totalitarian kind of fun totalitarian times they had by announcing it and acting all of those lockdown procedures. That shows you the types of people that were behind this and what they actually want for society. They want a totalitarian society. If they had just released it, they could have done that even if they. But what do you mean, talk about it? Talk about this report, you mean?
No, at the time.
Talk about it being
they have a fair idea of what it does to people.
Yeah.
Lowers IQ over the long term for most people.
Yeah.
So, excellent. It's working as designed. Okay. So now it's out there. Good. Just let it proliferate.
Yeah,
and
like
we
said,
in the know will take prophylactic measures, but we won't tell.
Well, they did that anyway.
The dumb, stupid herd.
Yeah. Who are now be dumber. But then, like I said, you avoid, you don't get.
Why alert them?
You don't
get
to do the lockdowns.
Yeah. That seemed to be an add-on feature.
Yeah. That was, they wanted
ad hoc.
More. They wanted extra. They wanted more lols. More totalitarian lols.
So that wasn't baked into the original planning of the intention for designing it. That kind of came along ad hoc
It could have been. It could be that they initially intended just to release this quietly and not tell anyone.
It makes you wonder if any others happened that way. What else is floating out there?
Yeah. It's probably a complicated topic, complicated science, obviously, you know. And I think it's possible that part of the reason for the lockdowns was that they actually wanted to stop the spread of the virus. And ridiculously,
because they started to see paradoxical effects that were having.
Yeah, that they got it wrong. Smarter. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's complicated, but it's obviously not an exact science. And you're talking about each individual responds differently to different viruses and stuff. And it mutates within them in different ways and all that kind of stuff. So like, it's very complicated, but these people are willing to just go ahead and do it and see what happens. You know, they're shitheads basically. For all the prowess and moi, ha ha ha, we're going to control the world, they're also a bunch of shitheads. Like, anybody who thinks that they're going to control the world in that way, in the way that these people think they're going to control the world, are fundamentally shitheads, you know? I mean, they might get, they'll achieve some success over the short term, but it'll all fall apart eventually. And just go, oh, well, we tried, yeah. Did you not think that trying to kind of completely lock down the world or control the world or corral everybody into little finite spaces, 15-minute cities and stuff, did you not think that was going to backfire at some point? No. Well, then you're a shithead. You're fundamentally a shithead. For all your smarts, you're actually ultimately very, very stupid. And that's the people we have to deal with. You know?
Maybe they want to reduce IQs because they want to bring them down to theirs.
Yeah.
But
well, that 10-point drop probably put a bunch of them, you know, in the negative, like, you know, they probably only had.
Oh, Joe Biden wasn't the same after COVID.
Well, he's got minus IQ at this point. Like, so anyway, Trump's not dead, as we announced. Breaking news there last week.
That's been a while now.
What was it? People said he was assassinated, but he wasn't.
It's 3 weeks. It's been 3 weeks. It's hard to believe.
We can reveal exclusively that Trump was not actually assassinated. That the guy missed, and Trump's all right.
Any luck finding the second shooter?
Yeah.
Where was he? Come on, everyone's hunting.
Where was that second shooter?
I'm seeing a lot of people, because they can't find it or a prospective site, they're just giving up and they're going, it was Crux. It was a lone gunman. Come on, guys. Don't lose the faith. Your first blink was correct.
Yeah.
It almost doesn't matter whether there was a second gunman or where he was. Your first blink was correct. Obviously, the sequence of events, the context in which it happened, was that this was a deep state hit job. It was meant to kill Trump. Because the next day was the RNC. Nikki fucking Haley was going to be the contender. Then they'd already booted Biden by basically doxing him through by calling an early debate. Remember? That wasn't supposed to happen until next month. Mm-hmm. Let's call it early so we have a runway, a time in which to say, oh, goodness me, he's senile.
Let's call it early and not give him any drugs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Put him in the debate without any drugs and we'll see. And then we can go, oh my God, this guy's a... guy's a doddering old idiot. He can't string a word together. So I allow for the possibility that Crux was a single shooter, but I don't allow for the possibility that it was not an inside job.
Yeah.
That he was, in a certain
he
sense,
was assisted on that.
Of course, absolutely assisted, facilitated. The whole thing was kind of like set up in advance. You know, all the anomalies, the security lapses, screw ups, etc. Not lapses, and now we learned, by design, you know.
We learned this week that until that event, there'd never been any counter-sniper unit assigned to Trump's. Trump's had Secret Service when he appears for this and that over these last few years. Never any snipers.
Yeah, when you look...
But this one, yes.
When you look at it, the level of control, it's obviously someone with absolutely unfettered access to the entire security apparatus around... the US government security apparatus, basically. It's quote-unquote deep staters, right? It's people who have the ability to get in there, and because if you look at all the details, to the point of, like, you know, shutting down the communications that day, that they didn't have communications, they didn't have any radio communications between the different groups that were there. They all had to use text messages. Just use your phone.
Fucking
somebody shit. Telling them to use your phone, you know?
Here, I'll send it via WhatsApp. Come on.
And, you know, just the fact that... The members of his security team were, you know, bunch of doofuses who had never worked together. They're from the DHS or pulled from different agencies.
They weren't his usual team.
Yeah,
they was cobbled together.
Right, and him relying on that is just ridiculous. It shows his naivety. I mean, he should always have had his own security. Like, it can't be that expensive for someone like him. You know what I mean? Just to hire a team and put them in all the buildings and secure the area. You know, but he relied on the Secret Service, and that was his big mistake, because, you know, newsflash for Trump, Secret Service is part of the, you know,
system,
part of the system, part of the intelligence community, effectively, that have been trying to destroy you for the past 8 years.
Yeah,
you know, so why are you relying on those people to protect you? Crux, suddenly he's a bomb maker, complicated stuff, making a bomb that would actually work. Apparently, at least one of them would have worked.
What's the story?
The car
is now a van.
The white van. Well, it was a white van.
With Arizona plates?
Yeah, exactly. And people saying, neighbours of where he lived, the house where he lived with his parents, saying they'd never seen that van before, so it wasn't his. So it's somebody else's. But, you know, this is the stuff that comes out when it's enough time has passed and people have stopped talking about it so much. It's only a group of fringe... right wing fringe conspiracy theorists who are still talking about it.
Oh my God, we've all moved on. It's all Kamala.
Yeah. But yeah, there's lots of details there about that whole operation that just stink. How Crooks got into the building, onto the building, the cops all around it.
I think he came through the building behind.
Yeah, I think he was let into the building and came in and get out on the roof.
Because that new footage, it's such a shame that it's so short, but the Copenhaver footage, he's the guy who got shot twice, apparently. Mm-hmm. He's in the direct line behind Trump on the bleacher beyond Trump's stage. His video is just 12 seconds, but it's tantalizing because Crooks is running on something.
Mm.
Now, people assumed he's running along the roof he took up position on. But it can't be that, because the only other footage of him beginning his ascent, his bear crawl up the roof, is just that. He's down on the edge of it, and he's very slowly, inching by inch, getting up quite a bit to move up it. Where was he running? He's not running at that. I think he's running on the building behind.
Behind, yeah. No, they fished a story from the FBI and they put it out in a statement of the timeline of the whole day was that he was, when he was pictured, one of the snipers, one of the local snipers in the building, in the two-story building behind, took a picture of him. He went round the building then, behind the building, and climbed up on some HVAC, some air conditioning, whatever.
Pipes.
Piping. They actually said he climbed up some pipes. He climbed on top of some, you know, maybe an air conditioning unit or something like that, and then climbed up a pipe and ran along multiple buildings, the roofs of multiple buildings, to get to his position. Now, if you look at, you'd have to, obviously, you've looked at this and look at where people were on that day and stuff, but this is just before he gets into position, before the shots are fired. Not long, a few minutes before the shots are fired, he's apparently running across the roof of these buildings. And there are a bunch of people, like maybe 30, 40 people, all standing in that area who apparently didn't see this guy walking past them, sneaking in round into this little kind of warren of buildings, climbing up on the roof then, running along and getting into position. So yeah, the most likely explanation is that he was let in. If someone just cracked the door, hey, come over here. And he goes, bring him up to the...
Give him his weapon at that point. Because they're obfuscating about his collapsible stock and how he bought it on a backpack with his bike, which wasn't his. So there was no, there was a backpack on the roof with him, but...
Yeah.
He's seen walking around in other footage beforehand. There's no backpack.
Mm-hmm.
He's empty-handed.
Yeah.
Oh, except for the rangefinder.
Yeah. Exactly.
So
it's a bit of a setup, yeah, in true fashion.
So at the very least, it's Mihop. Make it happen on purpose.
Mihop. So he was facilitated to get into the building, to be there. He was there to meet someone. He had met with people beforehand. He had been groomed in that respect. He came to that day with a plan made with his handlers. He's the patsy, obviously. And he's entered the building, given a gun, put up on the let out onto the roof. And then the only question is whether or not he fired all those shots, or whether the first three perhaps were fired by someone else who was maybe a better aim. Of course, people are saying, like, if you had someone who was an actual professional shooter, they wouldn't have missed. I can't say for sure. They miss now and again. But then they also said that it's hard to know. You have to bring in divine intervention, like we were talking last week, you know, in a certain sense. Was it possible that there was some other force at work that stopped Trump from being shot by a professional sniper? A windy day. It was a crosswind, basically. Whoever was shooting at Trump,
you could see that in the flag.
At 10 knots. Yeah, the flag was flying pretty strongly. So 10 knots crosswind. Trump turning his head. Okay, so, but if you're looking at him down a scope and you see that you missed with the first shot, you fire the other two, surely you don't miss with the other two, but the other two missed as well. And then the five-shot burst, you've got one, two, three, and then a two-second break, and then a five-shot burst. Five-shot burst maybe from Crooks, or maybe from the same person. Who knows? We don't know if Crooks shot any bullet that day, because given the evidence for it being, the whole scene being, you know, manufactured or
controlled
and contrived, anybody could have put eight bullet shells. Could have been the first up on the roof after the shooting and just dropped it shells. Am I saying shells right? Yeah, shells. Isn't that the word?
Cartridges,
shells. Whatever.
Shells are, you're moving up the tanks there.
No, yeah, cartridges. Did you not say shells though?
Casings.
Scotty,
you're American.
Casings, whatever.
What do they say?
I don't know.
With a spent bullet, what does it leave?
Casing.
Okay. Thank you.
Anybody could have dropped those on the roof beside him. You know,
it's just...
Generally speaking, in the history of these kind of patsy shootings that we've investigated, the patsy sometimes does and sometimes doesn't actually shoot.
Mm-hmm.
Often doesn't hit anything. Because
the key thing is to get him there.
He's just there to be a body, basically. Yeah. Which makes us think, that's why our first port of call in looking at this is there was another shooter, because there's nearly, all the ones we've looked at, there has been other shooters, evidence for other shooters, like professional shooters. So we go there first for this one, but we're struggling to find. But in all of them, we never had hard evidence.
No, you can never be sure.
Of...
Even in Vegas, I'm pretty sure it came from near the airport, so to the east. but could never pin it down.
What?
Where another shooter was.
I think it was in the crowd. Back from the crowd.
In the event.
Level. Yep.
So within the event.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. But there you go. It's open. It's wow. That's quite variance, no?
Yeah.
But still, the blink of everyone who was there was there was more than one shooter. Mm. Your first blink is correct. Mm-hmm. But there you're talking about pros, and by definition almost, they won't get seen or caught.
And they have all that time to set themselves up and pick the exact perfect location and run through the drill or whatever and make sure. And they can pick a location where you're not going to see them, where they know they're not going to be seen.
I want to correct what I just said. It's even more, it's even stranger, not stranger, it's more logical than that, so to speak. He or others are seen by local law enforcement. They're arrested. They're even shot at. But because you so thoroughly not just control the scene, but you control all the follow-up with the police, with the journalists, with the press.
FBI are all over.
Afterwards, that can be buried. So someone can be actually apprehended or even shot and killed.
Right, they don't care.
And it's just buried.
Yeah.
Taken away.
Perps can be on the scene and just blend into the local security forces. You know what I mean? They're wearing their uniforms. They're policing several sniper groups all around the place and different agencies around. You just wear the right uniform and you can go and shoot at Trump and then just walk out of the building and go, hey, what's going on?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a cleanup afterwards that they have control over that really allows them to act with impunity, basically.
Yeah.
So, it's going to be, by definition, very, very difficult. Anyway.
So Trump lives.
Trump lives.
And how did it go from wall to wall Kamala, and the polls are all saying she's the favorite.
Even
Joe Rogan's like, what the hell is going on?
They had to do that. Like, Trump was a shoe, and Trump was like, okay, after he got shot and survived, did the fight thing, he was like, he's definitely going to win.
Yeah, everyone's blink was, the deep state just tried to hit him.
Yeah.
And that's it. He's the president now. Mm-hmm. Fucking Mark Zuckerberg was up there going,
yeah. Wow.
That was badass. So
you're my man.
Elon Musk is like, well, he's won. I'm voting for him. And now it's got the wall-to-wall bullshit of information, saturation, flood the zone in that 3 weeks, has now got even those people going, oh, looks like Kamala's going to win.
Huh? How does that happen?
Huh? Are you fucking kidding me?
Just because it's Kamala?
That's part of the game. They're social proofing the shit out of you. They're making it seem like, well, everyone else is talking about Kamala. Gosh, gee, whiz, it looks like it's going to be Kamala's to lose now. No, it isn't. She's fucking 3% popularity. She is detested by her own people. Like, they're creating a plausible information environment in which, when it's rigged up the wazoo, y'all go, well, it did kind of look like Kamala back in August and September and October. Yeah, that's plausible. No, it's not plausible. It's bullshit. They're only going to stop Trump with another bullet or rigging like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Done.
We shall see. Anyway, you got anything else?
Yeah, Venezuela.
What about it?
They had a...
More of the same.
This is like the mind job of people in the switchering, like what we're talking earlier about, how the alignment of one flag in the Israel-Palestine issue pops up in the inverse relationship. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. In Venezuela, you've got the American right, who are still like getting over the shock of what just happened to Trump, rallied to the cause of Maduro is a dictator.
He lost the
election. He stole it.
He stole it
just like Biden.
Yeah.
I wake up one morning and the top trending thing with 7-8 million tweets is this Venezuela/Maduro.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, what the fuck just happened? What? And the next thing is like way down the list.
Mm-hmm. I was just like, what? They're doing that again?
I know. I shouldn't have been surprised. It's like umpteen times.
Maduro has to go. Yeah. You know, rigged elections, opposition candidate recognized as the real president by the U.S. Haven't you been here before? It's deja vu. I've been at least once, maybe twice.
I mean, more. Yeah.
I go back to Chavez, like, you know what I mean? It's like, this is just the same bullshit over and over again. And like, I'm not even, I'm like, yeah, move on. Next.
As Hugo Chavez himself would have said, Elon, you are a donkey. Which he said of George W. Bush.
Yeah.
He also called him the devil, but
yeah.
You are a donkey. One time he said that. That's just idiocy. This is, I can't believe. No, I can't. I can. I suppose I should have been like, oh, here we go again. But I couldn't believe that it was happening smack in the middle of certainly Twitter, if not, I don't know about the rest of social media, especially American conversations on social media were obviously all about Trump.
Uh-huh.
And then they just like, it's like, squirrel. And then they're all like, Maduro's a dictator. He rigged the election, just like Biden, obviously, because socialism, communism, and that's what the CIA wants, and the CIA just try to kill Trump. Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
No, wait, hang on. There's a video here of Maduro saying they, i.e. the same people, just try to whack Trump, and Trump should be careful, and he's on Trump's side, and he doesn't think elections should be settled that way. Maduro's on your side. And you're trying.
Yeah. There's no accounting for stupid. Like, there's no fixing stupid. That's the COVID for you. 10-point drop. That's crucial. 10-point drop. Anyway.
Yeah.
Will that do?
I think so.
Okay.
It's yeah.
It's about personal news. A friend of mine was admitted to hospital after swallowing. He had to go to hospital because he swallowed 6 plastic horses.
Jeez.
Yeah. Doctor, it's okay. The doctor described his condition as stable. So it should be okay. Anyway, so yeah, we're going to leave it there for this week, folks. I think that's a good note to finish on. Thanks for watching, listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. We'll be back next week with another one on whatever madness has been going on between now and then. So until then, have a good one.
Thanks for watching. Bye all.
Can't stop the signal now.